Welcome to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo, keeping you connected to your faith and your world. Teresa tackles the issues of faith and culture, the pro-life message, and media awareness. And now, here's Teresa Tomeo.
Happy Tuesday, April 9th, right? 2024, in the second week of Easter. Great to be with you on a Tuesday morning, and I'm sure many of you were busy watching the eclipse or some of the coverage, and I did hope that you checked out our websites because we have a lot of beautiful articles, and they're still up regarding the spiritual significance in terms of divine design. I wonder how many people who looked up at the solar eclipse yesterday thought about how perfectly everything has to happen in order for a solar eclipse to occur. Just something to think about, just saying. Anyhow, coming up on the program today, we have Deacon Dominic Serrato. He is a PhD, and he has a letter that he wants to talk about. This is a letter that is going to the Vatican regarding the lack of diaconate involvement in the upcoming synod. Now, this is not a petition, but this is just a very respectful letter that's being written out of concern, because we're hearing reports now of what's going to be coming up in terms of the different committees or different groups. And they are apparently going to be discussing the diaconate, but there, at least at this point in April, appears to be a lack of deacons involved in that discussion. So this is a point of Deacon Dominic writing this letter. He's the editor of The Deacon Magazine, also a noted author, and has great experience in the church, and he joins us at 15 minutes past the hour. And then with that very beautiful and powerful letter that came out, to the document that came out yesterday on the dignity of the human person, infinite dignity, we are going to take a look at it with someone who has been studying it closely, Father Tad Baholcek. He's an amazing priest and speaker and ethicist. He's actually the senior ethicist with the National Catholic Bioethics Center. He always has his own terrific website, which is fathertad.com. So we'll kind of, you know, break it down and look at the importance. And it covered so many issues, not just abortion, transgenderism, poverty, war, capital punishment, and also, of course, surrogacy and IVF, which has been making the headlines lately. So we'll dive into that a little bit. And there's some great stories as well, of course, on the Register and on Catholic News Agency and full coverage, EWTN News In Depth, and, of course, EWTN News Nightly. Tomorrow, Joni is going to be with us because it's a Wednesday, so she'll also be following up with more on what she's hearing from Rome on the reaction to the document. So it is a pretty busy week and a busy morning. Again, Deacon Dominic Serrato right after the break and our news and the weather. And then Father Tad Baholcek from the National Catholic Bioethics Center taking a close look at the document on the infinite dignity of the human person made in the image and likeness of God, which came out from the Vatican yesterday. Weather-wise, severe thunderstorms are expected to produce several tornadoes, significant large hail, and damaging winds across most of Texas toward the lower Mississippi Valley. That is through tomorrow morning and all the way across the Gulf Coast states through tomorrow as well. Then we have heavy to excessive rainfall may lead to flash, urban small stream, and minor to moderate river flooding in some areas as well. So it's good that they moved out some of that bad weather, at least waited for today, because otherwise a lot of people would have missed the eclipse, or at least part of it. It is a Tuesday morning. We're so appreciative of your listenership. And I do want to make a reminder, just put a little bug in your ear. Ave Maria Radio is having their spring pledge drive this week, so we just ask for your prayers. And this is just a reminder that if you have a local radio affiliate or apostolate in your area, to check and see when their drive is, because each year the stations, and some have their own networks within the network. They have many radio stations under their helm, just like we do at Ave Maria. And they do fundraisers, okay? Because we work hand-in-hand with EWTN, and EWTN provides the radio programming, like this program, for example, for free. But those local stations have to raise their own money to keep the lights on. And maybe you just haven't thought about it or haven't had time. I know we're all busy, but they could really use your support. First and foremost, your prayers. And if you don't have an affiliate in your area, maybe give a little extra to EWTN or go online at EWTN.com to the radio section, and it lists all the affiliates. We're now up to something like 420 radio stations around the country, and that's just the brick-and-mortar stations. That's not including Sirius and the Internet and all the different outlets that we have for really good Catholic programming. But just to remind you that there are a lot of fundraisers this time of year and also in the fall. And as Mother Angelica always said, keep us between, please, your gas and your electric bills. A lot of news to get through on a Tuesday morning, April 9th, 2024. So let's see what's happening in and around the world on a Tuesday. The Vatican issued a declaration on the theme of human dignity yesterday, addressing growing concerns such as gender theory, sex changes, surrogacy, and euthanasia, in addition to abortion, poverty, human trafficking, and more. As Catholic News Agency explains, a Vatican declaration issued by the Dicastery for the Doctrine of the Faith states, in the face of so many violations of human dignity that seriously threaten the future of the human family, the Church encourages the promotion of dignity of every human person, regardless of their physical, mental, cultural, social, and religious characteristics. The declaration is entitled Dignitas Infinita, which means infinite dignity, and also warns that euthanasia and physician-assisted suicide are swiftly gaining ground in some parts of the world. The Church saying it's unique in how it utilizes a mistaken understanding of human dignity to turn the concept of dignity against life itself. The Arizona Supreme Court set to issue a ruling today that could either allow abortions up to 15 weeks or ban nearly all of them by reinstating a law. The current law since 2022 bans abortion after 15 weeks except when the life of the mother is at risk. A major sports governing body banning transgender athletes from women's sports competitions, the National Association of Intercollegiate Athletics Council of Presidents, approving the policy in a unanimous vote yesterday after a survey indicated heavy support for that ban. The association is a national athletic governing body for 249 small colleges across the nation that are not part of the NCAA three divisions. The decision does not apply to the NCAA competitions. The NAIA is believed to be the first national college governing body, though, to ban transgender athletes from women's competitions. And the number of Catholics worldwide increasing by 14 million in 2022, according to the Vatican's Statistical Yearbook of the Church released earlier this month and highlighted in a report by the Vatican newspaper L'Osservatore Romano. The figures, as Catholic News Agency explains, from 2021 to 2022, the most recent years where numbers are available, marking a decrease in the number of priests and seminarians. While vocations, though, to the priesthood and religious life have decreased overall, the Church shows signs of growth in some parts of the world, most notably in Africa and Asia. In other news this morning, Brian Shook tells us the Justice Department refusing to turn over recordings of Joe Biden's interview about his improper handling of classified documents.
House Republicans set Monday as the deadline for Attorney General Merrick Garland to release the records or possibly face a contempt of Congress charge. The interview has become a lightning rod after former special counsel Robert Hur called Biden an elderly man with a poor memory. Garland is refusing to turn over the recordings because he believes the GOP wants them for political reasons.
Crews are removing cargo containers from the ship that crashed into Baltimore's Francis Scott Key Bridge last month, causing it to collapse. Coast Guard officials say crews are making progress toward removing pieces of the bridge from the ship so they can take the weight off of it and start to move it. Over the weekend, workers removing the first piece of the bridge as the salvage work continues to untangle the massive wreckage. The Republican leadership in Texas wondering whether this will be the week that a federal appeals court rules on the legality of a controversial new immigration law. Governor Greg Abbott is eager, though, for it to go into effect.
What Texas is doing is not in conflict with the laws of the United States of America.
The law allows local police to arrest anyone they believe crossed the border illegally. It's currently blocked because of a handful of lawsuits. They argue that only the federal government can enforce immigration law. And today is the sentencing day for James and Jennifer Crumbly, the parents of the Oxford High School shooter just north of Detroit at this high school there. Both were convicted in separate trials on four counts of involuntary manslaughter for the November 2021 shooting of four students and will be sentenced together.
A lot of judges want to hear, remember, you're convicted now. They want to hear what you have to say. They want to hear remorse and they want to hear contrition. They want to see you apologize.
That is criminal defense attorney Neil Rockin. The couple face a maximum sentence of 15 years in prison, and the Oakland County Prosecutor's Office is recommending at least 10 for each. Their son pleading guilty to all charges and is serving life in prison without parole. A Washington Superior Court judge in Keslo, Washington, ruling that, as Brad Ford reports, the state's limit on high-capacity magazines is unconstitutional.
The ruling came from a case brought by the Washington Attorney General's Office against Gators Custom Guns for selling high-capacity magazines. Attorney General Bob Ferguson called the ruling incorrect. His office is filing a motion to the state Supreme Court to keep the law in effect. Ferguson says every court in Washington and across the country that has considered similar challenges has either rejected the challenge or it's been overruled.
You don't just have to ingest fentanyl to be affected by that deadly drug. Governor Ron DeSantis of Florida yesterday signing a bill to protect first responders who may come in contact with the drug's residue.
We actually had a case in Florida. Unfortunately, a family was renting an Airbnb unit, and you had a young baby that was crawling on the carpet, and there had been residue left over from, I guess, whoever was using it before. It was fentanyl residue, and it killed the baby.
If you lie to law enforcement about having drugs in your possession and the officer is exposed and harmed, the governor says you'll face a second-degree felony. DeSantis also signing a measure adding 17 counties to the original 12 core network counties battling drug abuse and trafficking. The governor also announcing a decrease in drug overdose deaths in his state, a 9% decrease from September of 2022 to September of 2023. Brooks Walker tells us a California lawmaker wants full transparency on hidden restaurant food delivery fees.
When you order your favorite eats from online delivery platforms like DoorDash and Grubhub, there are hidden fees charged to the restaurant. These fees can drive up the costs of deliveries to you, the consumer. The bill's author, Senator Maria DeRazzo, says the bill aims to require the delivery platform to inform customers what fees are being charged to both them and the restaurant. DeRazzo tells the Sacramento Bee that this transparency measure would allow customers to make informed decisions.
The IRS wavering failure to pay penalties for eligible taxpayers. Mark Stieber with Jackson Hewitt's Tax Service says it's due to the collection notice pause during 2020 and 21.
A lot of people got caught in difficult situations, couldn't pay their taxes, but at the same time, the IRS started delaying notices out of an abundance of understanding.
The penalty relief will benefit about 5 million taxpayers and provide an estimated $1 billion in tax relief. The relief automatic for those eligible, so no action is required. A refund or credit payment toward outstanding tax liabilities will be used to taxpayers who qualify. An IRS spokesman says the government should be looking out for taxpayers, and this penalty relief is a common-sense approach to help people in this situation. Tammy Trujillo tells us Google Trends show searches for "why do my eyes hurt" or "eyes hurt" spike during yesterday's solar eclipse.
The term saw a jump in the number of searches around 2 p.m. Eastern, which is about the time the eclipse started to be seen in the U.S. Searches peaked at 3 p.m. Eastern. Other popular searches in the U.S. on Monday included "can I look at the sun" and "solar eclipse, no glasses." Those who wanted to view the eclipse were advised to use a special pair of glasses to avoid eye damage.
Monday's eclipse wowed millions. One father brought his family to watch the event at Indianapolis Motor Speedway.
I thought it was awesome. Once-in-a-lifetime experience. Great, great experience for the kids to share.
Millions watching the shadow of the eclipse move from Texas to Maine. The next total solar eclipse won't be visible again from the contiguous U.S. until 2044. NASA says it will only shadow three states in its path, North and South Dakota and Montana. And as millions of folks traveling home from viewing yesterday's solar eclipse, well, they're going to be facing higher gas prices. The current average for a gallon of gas is $3.60, up a penny from yesterday. That's 21 cents higher than last month, but almost exactly the same as it was a year ago. Prices are highest in the state of California, $5.37 a gallon. They're the cheapest in Colorado at $3.06. Thanks for tuning in to Catholic Connection, a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN. We'll be right back on a Tuesday.
The most original and exclusive Catholic content is on EWTN Radio.
I pray that EWTN News in Depth will help the everyday life of everyday Catholics by bringing them the news that matters to them and helping them to have the information at their fingertips for whatever it is that they need to be able to engage with the world confidently with their faith.
EWTN News in Depth with Monse Alvarado, Friday night, 8 Eastern, on EWTN Television and Radio.
People ask how they can care for older family members who can't fully care for themselves. One answer is Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care. Visiting Angels assists adults nationwide with 600 locations to continue living at home and not have to move into a nursing home. Their caregivers provide assistance in hygiene, meals, and light housework. Services are provided up to 24 hours per day, and you can select your caregiver before service begins. More information, including franchise opportunities, is on the web at visitingangels.com.
Do you have a teenager at home who's full of potential? Too often the world is telling you to be content with mediocrity instead of raising respectful and responsible young adults with strong character. Hi, everybody. I'm Dr. Ray. If you need some help, not only to navigate those teen years, but to really enjoy them, check out my book, Standing Strong, Good Discipline Makes Great Teens, as well as my other books, on the store page at AveMariaRadio.net.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria mutual funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
As a deacon's wife and a contributor to the Deacon magazine, it's great to have Deacon Dominic Strada with that magazine, and also someone who is a permanent deacon and theologian here in the U.S. and just a great, great resource for all of us. Talking today about a very special and respectful letter that will be sent to the Vatican regarding the discussion on the diaconate at the Vatican in the Synod, but also a lack of diaconate involved in that discussion. Deacon Dominic, always great to talk with you. Buona Pasqua, as we say in our native Italian. Good to talk to you. Happy Easter.
Happy Easter to you, Teresa. Nice to hear your voice.
All right, so let's talk a little bit about what prompted this letter in the first place. Let's give us some background on it, if you wouldn't mind.
Sure, Teresa. As I was looking at the Synod and what it was trying to do in the much larger church, one of the elements of the Synod was a discussion on the diaconate, particularly the admission of women to holy orders. And what I noticed was that all of the segments of the church seemed to be present except for that of the diaconate. And this lacuna or this gap meant that the not only the theology of the diaconate as understood by those who live it was absent, but also the lived experience of the diaconate was absent in the discussion. And it would seem to me rather odd, because if you were to have a synod, let's say, that talks about the nature of women, which this does, and you excluded women, that would be terrible. If you had one on the laity, which this does talk about, and there was an absence of the laity, that would be terrible. It would be an absence, a grave absence. And I thought, as I looked at the participants, there was no diaconal participation. It's almost as though those of us who were called to serve at table, as Acts chapter 6 says, were not at that table. And I thought I needed to bring this to the attention in case this was simply something that was overlooked.
So what did you do? You wrote a beautiful letter, a very respectful, very beautiful letter. Tell us about it.
Yes. So after discussing and getting approval from my bishop and his blessing, as I began to think about it and asking around, Cardinal Grech, who's the secretary of the synodal process, I felt compelled and motivated by the Spirit to write a very respectful letter and asking whether or not the diaconate can be included in the discussions. I wanted the letter to be a request. I wanted it to be extraordinarily respectful. And I also included the possibility of other deacons, and I would include bishops and priests because they too are deacons, to sign, not as a petition, this is critical, but rather as a sign of support. This is not a movement of activism, but rather a simple request by the diaconal community, at least one in the diaconal community, to include deacons in the conversation.
Do you know, because there have been some stories recently also about possible discussions in the fall in October at the Synod, and it seems like, and correct me if I'm wrong, you know more about this probably than I do as a deacon yourself, but I've been following it pretty closely. It looks like they are going to be talking and discussing the diaconate at least on some level again. Is that your understanding as well?
That's correct. And once again, it's the question of the admission of women to the diaconate seems to be the question at large, which, of course, two prior commissions, two prior papal commissions, and then one earlier theological, theological commission discussed. And those findings, particularly last two, have not been open to the public, and I understand that they will be made open to the public at that time, and then further discussion can take place.
But at the same time, there won't be deacons involved in that discussion, as far
as
you know.
That's correct. That's correct. There is, I believe, a single deacon, but he is not even listed as a deacon and grouped with the laity. So it seems to me that there is one deacon by accident on the synod. But the diaconate as an order, one who is ordained and ontologically configured to Christ the servant,
right,
to be the preeminent witness of Christ the servant, to embolden and inspire laity to be servants, is absent from the servant church.
I'm wondering, and by the way, if you're just joining us, about 20 minutes past the hour on a Tuesday morning edition of Catholic Connection Coast to Coast and around the globe, we're talking with Deacon Dominic Serrato from the Deacon Magazine, also a permanent deacon and theologian here in the U.S. Do you think this could be because, and I know that you were at the big gathering that that took place several years ago in Rome, and also we had the big convocation back in, it was 8 years ago already in New Orleans, which was wonderful. But I'm wondering, is it because Europe really hasn't embraced the diaconate as strongly as we have in the United States? And also, I know Australia has quite a large number of deacons as well. But in Europe, it's not a thing yet in
the
church.
No. Certainly much less in Eastern Europe than in Western Europe. And even in its embrace, often the theology of the diaconate is lost. And so an understanding of what it is, keep in mind that the Restoration occurred 50 years ago. So in the life of the church, it's just a blink of an eye. So the understanding of the nature of sacred ecclesial service hasn't been embraced. And I believe because of that reason, you're seeing less in those countries and those areas of the world than you do in the United States. Still, you're talking about the diaconate. And so you have some knowledge, at least the synod expresses some knowledge of the diaconate. You would think then they would turn to those areas of the world that
right.
have the diaconate to get a better understanding of what the lived experience of that diaconate is.
Well, your point that they're talking about, you know, this whole topic of, and I know we can even ask you about that in the next segment about women being ordained to the diaconate. If they're bringing women in for that conversation, then why aren't they bringing deacons in for that conversation? Because it affects your ministry. I want to just read a paragraph from the letter, which I think is super important on the lack of deacons at the synod. And then when you come back, maybe we can read the entire letter. But reflecting on the recent 16th Ordinary General Assembly of the Synod of Bishops, I noticed that deacons as a distinct order were not represented in the universal phase of this vital gathering. Despite the vibrant presence of over 450 dedicated bishops, priests, religious, and lay Catholics, the absence of deacons in these discussions was felt deeply among the order. As you are aware, deacons are sent to the periphery in hospitals, nursing homes, jails, prisons, food kitchens, and among the poor. And as importantly, these men, most of whom are married, remain professionally embedded in the secular world, bringing the embrace of ordination to the spheres of manual labor, schools, law enforcement, teaching, and more. They are numbered among those who have the smell of the sheep, as the Holy Father likes to say. Because we are clerics who live a lay life, we move from the sanctuary into the nave and out into the world, giving us unique access and insight among the marginalized. So that in itself, I think, is so powerful, Deacon Dominic, because that's what you do, and you do so well as deacons. You are in the world, not of the world, but you do take on the smell of the sheep because you're experiencing what the sheep are experiencing in so many ways.
Well, that's correct. And it's that unique insight. It's a unique insight that adds to the complementarity of the whole of the church, which is absent. That beautiful image that we move from the sanctuary into the nave and out in the world and back again means that we experience a kind of dialectic, a back and forth, one foot in the sanctuary, the other foot in the world, one foot at the proclaiming the gospel, the other foot changing dirty diapers. And so we have a unique, a visceral experience of both. And in that respect, we act as a kind of bridge, a bridge which is currently absent in the synod dialogues.
So before we take a break, we have about a minute left. What's been the response so far from to the letter?
Well, the letter just really has gone out, and we've got about, at this point, 455 deacons that have signed up from different parts of the world, from Australia to South and Central America, a little bit in Europe, particularly in Scotland and England, not much in the Eastern and Western European, but that's part of the effort to get the letter out. It's not the number of guys signing up for this. That's really about prayer and support. It's about what the letter says and the importance, if the church is going to have a dialogue, to have everyone present so that the whole voice of the church is present.
If they were to do this, and I'm speaking respectfully, of course, when I use the pronoun they as of those involved in the synod, but if they were to do a discussion about women at all without women present, that would make international headlines. And so this is,
absolutely.
Right, don't you think?
Yep, absolutely.
And this is why it's so important. It doesn't make any sense, just common sense, to have a discussion about the diaconate without representation from the diaconate. So hence the reason for the letter. We are chatting with Deacon Dominic Serrato, permanent deacon and theologian, also the editor of The Deacon Magazine, a beautiful magazine, by the way. Proud to have. How long have I been writing for you now? Like 5 years,
oh,
6 years?
Goodness gracious, yeah, since 2018.
Wow, it's longer than that. My goodness.
Mm-hmm.
You're the best. We'll be right back more with Deacon Dominic to talk about this letter and if you have a deacon in your family or if you're a deacon, how you can check it out. It's very respectful, beautifully written, and encouraging the Vatican to take a second look at the diaconate, including deacons in the discussion. Diaconalministries.org/synod. Again, diaconalministries.org/synod. More with Deacon Dominic when we come back. Minutes past the hour. Welcome back. It's a Tuesday morning edition of Catholic Connection, April 9th, 2024. An honor to have Deacon Dominic Serrato on with us. He is a permanent deacon and theologian, also the editor of the Deacon Magazine, has also written extensively and studied the issue of possible ordination of women. We'll get to that in a second. Deacon Dominic, I'm just wondering in terms of how the bishops see this in the U.S., because they're so supportive of the diaconate, and really the United States is light years ahead, as you mentioned earlier, of so many other areas of the world with moving the diaconate forward. You went through with this letter with the blessing of your bishop, obviously. What did he have any insight as to why this there's this absence of the presence of deacons at the Synod discussions?
Well, it's difficult to say for sure. I think one of the reasons is just pure oversight, perhaps, and part of that is that the diaconate hasn't really entered into the Catholic imagination, particularly in parts of Europe and elsewhere. I think that's part of the reason. There may be other parts of the reason. I don't want to speculate that, but I think it's probably somewhere in between. It's an oversight, or maybe the voice is not considered that important.
That's a shame. I really hope that changes. And by the way, to get the letter, diaconalministries.org/synod, diaconalministries.org/synod. So when they go to that website, they see the letter, and then they can add their name to it, correct?
That's correct. And we're looking only for the names of deacons and then priests, because priests are still deacons and bishops. We've had priests and bishops, few of them, but most of the people who signed up are deacons. They can actually go just to the website. I put a button on this morning where they can go right to the letter. And
okay.
Then it says, join us at the bottom.
Great. Let's talk a little bit, because you've written extensively and researched this topic, and there's still a push for women to be ordained to the diaconate. Give us some background on that and what you discovered in your research.
Right, right. So, you know, I was selected by the Holy Father
right.
to be on the International Papal Commission. Now, that information, that content is under pontifical secret, but this is my thoughts as a private theologian, and I publish these. And I looked at what the Holy Father had to say, and there are three reasons why I don't think the admission of women to the diaconate is possible, or the church even has the authority or power to do that. Remember, the church is the steward of God's truth. She's not the master of God's truth. The Holy Father, first of all, indicates that it must be grounded in divine revelation. In fact, he said that repeatedly to the superior generals. It must be in divine revelation. If it's not in divine revelation, that is scripture or tradition as understood by the magisterium, then we can't go forward, because the church is the steward of the truth. And so when we look at divine revelation, while there was certainly a person named Phoebe who is sometimes titled as deacon or deaconess, that simply means she was a servant. There was no appearance of the deaconesses until the 4th century in the West. Secondly, and this is really important, about 2 years ago there was a revision to canon law, canon 1379-3, which indicated, and this is brand new, indicated that if one were to attempt ordination who's the one bishops, attempt ordination of a woman, they would be laetae sententiae, that's at the moment of being done, excommunicated from the church, reserved to the Holy See, and maybe reduced to the lay state. Now, why would the chief legislator of the church allow this in here if he was thinking in the other direction? And finally, in American Magazine some months ago, he indicated the distinction between the Petrine and Marian dimensions of the church, the sort of complementary between the male and the female. And in that respect, he says, I don't believe it's possible to ordain women to the diaconate. So for those three reasons, and the final reason, which should encapsulate this, is that you can't discuss women and the diaconate without discussing the whole of holy orders, because there's a contextual theological framework by which to do it. And so you got to place it within that context, and you cannot answer a theological question with a sociological response. It's not sufficient.
I know you're not a mind reader, but you're a very intelligent man who studied this. But I'm wondering why these discussions at the Synod regarding possible ordination of women to the diaconate, or the role of women in the diaconate, if there is any, why these discussions if the church doesn't intend to move forward with this? What do you think? Just to discuss it, put it out on the table, say it was discussed?
Well, I think that's in part, and then there might be, there's certainly a little legitimate discussion as to the role of women in the church as the church begins to apply the gift of God's revelation to today. And that's a legitimate discussion. There have been some discussions, well, let's make a kind of diaconate for women, but we'll call it certain deaconesses, but it won't be the same. Well, I think that's really going to confuse matters more. I don't think that's going to really help matters at all. So I think they're including the discussion because they certainly want to hear the various voices. But hearing voices in and of itself is not sufficient. Again, the synod is not the magisterium. The synod provides insights of the whole church. It's listening. The magisterium, which is the bishops in union with the pope and always in union with the pope, the magisterium makes the decision. And, of course, the Holy Father, being the Holy Father, is the one who will make the final decision here.
But it still doesn't make any sense to have any discussion at all about the diaconate at the synod or any other major event within the church and not have deacons present.
Yes, it doesn't make sense. And that's the reason for the letter. I certainly could speculate. It's not necessarily good for my soul to do that, but I can speculate as to certain reasons why that's the case. It doesn't matter to me what is the case. Rather, I need to bring it to the attention. If I bring it to the attention and deacons are still omitted, then you can draw some conclusions that this is not an oversight. But I think until this letter moves forward and gets into the hands of Cardinal Grech, I don't know that we can go beyond what we've already said.
Yeah. I really hope that it gets the attention because it's so important in the diaconate. I know maybe I'm somewhat biased because Deacon Dom, as you know, my husband's been a deacon for almost 12 years, but it's such a beautiful ministry, just as you described in the letter, because you are in there among the people and then you're back in the church, and so you're understanding truly what the people are going through on a different level.
I think you're right. The diaconate, you've got to ask a question, Teresa, and it's an interesting question. Why, when we're seeing a reduction in the number of priests, in the number of religious, in people going to church, why is the diaconate on the rise? Why is this order, which is an ancient order restored, on the rise? What is God saying to his church about the nature of service? Hmm. Because at its core, as I end my letter there, the church is at our core a servant church.
Right.
And service permeates everything of the church because Christ came not to be served, but to serve.
And that's a whole idea of a deacon. That's a whole idea of a priest. And I wish we could also embrace as Catholics, understand that equality does not equal sameness. There are different roles for different people. And even the Pope himself said, when he was asked about possibly a female priesthood, he said, look at the churches that have ordained women. I mean, is that like making people flock to the church? No. Many of them, including the Episcopalian Church in many ways, are imploding, literally. They're losing so many people. So it's not just people have to understand and really kind of dive into this and ask God to help you understand, why does the church teach this? What is it about the role of the priest and the deacon? Why is it so unique to men? I mean, there's so much out there to read about it, and it's so beautiful. Before we let you go, give us a website for the letter, but also if they want to read more about this topic, Deacon Dominic, both the letter and also the whole idea of ordination for the diaconate, where would they go?
Well, Well, they go to diaconalministries.org, one word, diaconalministries.org. You can go right to the homepage. Just scroll down a little bit. You'll see a little button that'll take you to the letter, and then you can read the letter. And I give a little thing before it describing it, and that's where they can go. Also, can check out my book, Encountering Christ the Servant, which lays out the theology and spirituality of the diaconate.
Awesome. Deacon Dominic, always great to catch up with you. Thanks for all your great work. We'll be right back. Another great man who was ordained, Father Ted from the National Catholic Bioethics Center, is up next. We'll be right back. Nine minutes past the hour. It is a Tuesday in the second week of Easter, April 9th. Thanks for tuning in. Always great to catch up with an amazing priest and teacher and ethicist, Father Ted Poholcek, PhD and senior ethicist at the National Catholic Bioethics Center. So, Father, I know you spend a great deal of time, and we thank you for that because we're looking for your insight, looking at the Vatican document that was just released yesterday on the dignity of the human person. Infinite Dignity is the English translation. So what did you think?
Yes, well, I mean, as I was mentioning to you, I had the chance to read the whole thing this morning. I do think it's rather helpful, well-written in many passages, and building upon a very important theme for us as Christians, and I think really a theme that's of great relevance to people even of a secular stripe. Reference is made a couple of times to the documents from the United Nations, from the UN, on human dignity, and you know, I think that's an important sort of point of commonality that we can build upon as well.
I do think also, speaking of timeliness and newsworthy stories, IVF and surrogacy have been in the news so much lately, and the Vatican was very clear on where the Church stands on those issues. So this is an opportunity for people, even Catholics, to really, I was talking about this yesterday with Kristen Hawkins from Students for Life, that we really need to educate ourselves on these issues.
Definitely. I was glad to see several sections dedicated to surrogacy and very strong language, which we have seen previously coming from the Holy Father himself on this matter. And again, tying it into the notion of the unalienable dignity of the child. So, you know, emphasis again that because of that dignity, the child has the right to have a fully human origin and not some kind of, you know, artificially induced origin that speaks to where he comes from or where she comes from. Very valuable insight, something that I think calls all of us to unpack even further, you know, the wisdom really of the Church's position on human procreation. And also, you know, this brings out that there's a violation of the dignity of the woman that always happens when you shift over to surrogacy. Whether she's coerced or whether she freely chooses it, the document points out, even when she freely chooses it, there's a violation of her own dignity that happens here. She's being instrumentalized by others who are paying
right
to bring that child into the world. So these are very important things for us as a society. We've kind of grown lax, I think, around many of these issues of human life and human origins, and this document is helpful in refocusing our attention.
Talking with Father Ted Poholcek, who's a senior ethicist at the National Catholic Bioethics Center, about the document released yesterday by the Vatican. It was in the works, actually, for several years, Infinite Dignity. The other thing, too, I think that's super important, Father Ted, is that all of these things, when you talk about surrogacy or IVF, they always promote them in the culture and those who support them. Oh, it's all about freedom. It's all about what I want to do, and I deserve a child. I want this, or I want to make money in this way. As you said, even with surrogacy, if a woman says, well, I want to be able to do this because it you know, I want to help someone, or I can also maybe use the money, whatever the reason, it is not about freedom. It is actually turning you into a commodity.
That's right. And the abuse of our freedom is something that the document also addresses, because in the name of that same freedom, there may be the temptation to turn to assisted suicide or euthanasia. Say, I'm free to do what I want. And the document points out that when you talk about death with dignity, you know, they use the word dignity, this is not actually consistent with an understanding of what human dignity is all about or the respect that is due to the human person. So, you know, in other words, the document is saying, in that particular case, suffering that we experience at the end of life does not diminish our dignity as humans, even though the world sort of tells us that it does. And that's a constant refrain throughout this document, that we have to always look to the, and the term they use is ontological dignity. You know, this dignity that flows from our being. The fact that we're a member of the human family, of the human race, automatically confers a dignity on us, automatically implies certain duties and obligations to respect our human nature, is received, you know, as being a member of that family. And that's, you know, really the basis of the wisdom, I think, of the whole document. It's just reiterated throughout over and over. And there are many temptations that come up, even in the name of freedom, as you're pointing out, that may draw us in a false direction that's actually contrary to human dignity.
And within each of those areas, whether it's IVF, abortion, euthanasia, all these different things, there's so much abuse, and people don't realize because they look at the surface. And we really need to go beyond the emotion. People say, well, the church is against IVF, or the church is against surrogacy, or all these things and whatnot, yet they claim to be so pro-life. Well, why does the church teach this? What does the church say about it? What happens? Or in the case of euthanasia, you know how many if I had a penny, Father, for every time I covered Jack Kevorkian, which I did for years in the secular media because I'm from southeastern Michigan, and he was making big news every other week practically, for the every time the coroner told me that the person that he helped take their own life, basically, assisted suicide, right, that was his big thing. If I had a penny for every time that coroner told me, the medical examiner told me, that that person was not literally dying or could have been treated and they could have lived for several years and their pain could have been controlled, I could have quit my job. I mean, it was constantly abused. People were made to feel pressured. We need to go deeper and to understand why the church gives us these teachings.
Yeah, and, you know, this document brings out very nicely that when we talk about individuals who are facing, the term they use is acute vulnerability, that should cause us always to pause and say, well, wait a minute, if they're in a moment of being disadvantaged, of facing acute vulnerability because they're weak at the end of life, what do we owe them? You
right.
know, we owe them really the care, the loving care of good end-of-life treatment, good end-of-life decision-making, good pain management, good hospice care, being present to them, holding their hands, praying with them, and not offering them this false answer that they can take their own lives. You know, and I sometimes remind people, this is marketed as a kind of get-out-of-jail-free card, but I say to them, look, the reality here is that if we do this, we actually don't know what awaits us on the other
right.
side. You
right.
may find yourself in a far worse position than you were in when you were suffering in this life. So people need to be, you know, much more circumspect and much more thoughtful about this matter than they are. They kind of go by knee-jerk emotionalism and say, this is going to be my easy way out at the end. And there may be some surprises, I'm afraid, some big surprises when we get on the other side, if we have, you know, opted for those false answers that the church is reminding us all the time really are not in accord with human dignity.
And I think the timing of this, again, with all the stories that are out there about abortion, of course, that's a big issue, still a hot-button issue here in the U.S. with the election, you know, looming in front of us in November, surrogacy, IVF, euthanasia, all these things are in the news, especially in the United States, but around the world. So again, I just think this reminds us of the church, of who she is in terms of having the fullness of truth when it comes to the human person. And these are the answers that we need to review, to understand, and to understand them better ourselves, Father, but also to be able to explain them to people who have questions.
I agree, and I think that's where the congregation here, or the dicastery, to use the proper term, you know, in issuing this document, they're hoping that people will do more of that, that they'll ponder, reflect on these basic points that are so key to our understanding of human beings. And, you know, if we do that, then they point out there'll be other goods that will arise. Because when you recognize the dignity of another person and of all other people, it immediately opens up possibilities, for example, of fraternity, of, you know, building human community and not just devolving into perpetual persecutions or wars or disagreements or fighting. And so, you know, there's great value to be had here. Similarly, this document does point out as well that we have to look at the whole area of gender theory much more closely than we have, and recognize that there's significant potential for violations of human dignity if we buy into this notion that sexual difference doesn't matter. It does matter, and this document points out that these sexual differences are hugely important to human dignity and towards the way then that we relate to each other in terms of reciprocity. And we can't deny these differences. We do so at our own peril. Mm-hmm. And in fact, the document even talks about certain kinds of ideological colonization that are occurring in this whole area of gender theory. And I think we see that right in front of our own eyes today, don't we? It's just everywhere.
Right. The interesting thing, though, and I noticed, of course, being a media person, looking at the media coverage of it yesterday, most of it was pretty straightforward, but they did always happen to throw in the news stories that the Pope has met with transgender people in Rome numerous times, and also that the Vatican has given approval for people who identify as trans to be godparents. I don't know what they're trying to do with that, but it can be confusing if you see a story like that and realize that they were very clear on transgender theory, but at the same time that those other things that they mentioned are in fact happening. So how do we wrestle with that as Catholics or trying to be faithful?
Yeah, that's very challenging. I agree. I think sometimes people look first to the pastoral practice, and to the extent that the pastoral practice is not reflecting well these deeper truths that we recognize, there is grounds for confusion, and we need to be clear. You know, I always say to people, look, our Lord Jesus, he was never unclear. Yes, he was charitable. Yes, he loved the sinner, but he was never unclear. And we have the duty to do the same. Sin remains something to be resisted. It's the basis of a call for conversion. But even in the midst of that call of conversion, we do respect that individual who may be caught in the midst of that sin.
Right.
So that's
but the document was very clear on that, though, too. It did reiterate, and again, what the Catechism says about that discrimination against anyone for any reason, how they identify or their upbringing or where their status in life, that's sinful.
Absolutely. The document was clear on that. So, you know, I think this document is attempting to map out, in a sense, both elements. And I think sometimes we might say, well, maybe they should have emphasized, you know, something a little more than something else. You know, it's a long document. It's got more than 60 sections to it. So, you know, it's not going to be able to perfectly nuance all these issues. But I think it does a generally good job of opening up here the basic grounds for, you know, reasonable approach to these matters.
And I do think it's understandable. I think it's written at a level where, you know, a Catholic or someone interested in these issues, which so many people are these days, can read it. So how should we use it as faithful Catholics, Father, before we let you go?
Well, I do think it's the kind of document that it just makes sense to dedicate some time to read it, especially for people who may have, you know, connections to medical ethics issues, bioethics, or involved in the gender arena. I think all of people, you know, in those areas would benefit in a special way. But also I think the opening sections on sort of the theoretical basis for understanding human dignity is very helpful. It reaches into Scripture, goes into a little bit of Thomas Aquinas, you know, and reminds us of the many different touch points throughout our history where this has developed and contributed really to a wholesome understanding of what human dignity is and how serious our duty is then to safeguard human dignity at all stages of human life. And also, you know, touches on things like immigrants, migrants,
war, poverty,
poverty,
all those things.
Disability, et cetera. So it throws a wide net, casts a wide net, as it were.
Well, Father, always appreciate your reflections and your commentary and your insights with your background as senior ethicist for the National Catholic Bioethics Center. Also, your website is awesome, by the way. It's really well done. You've got great videos and articles there. It's fathertad.com, the word father spelled out, so fathertad.com. He's got videos, resources, writings, his appearances on radio and TV. great information, so check it out at fathertad.com. Father, appreciate you, and we'll have you back on very soon. You're excellent. Thanks so much.
Oh, thanks so much, Teresa. Appreciate you as well. You do great work. God bless you.
Thank you. Have a great week. Father Tad Poholcek, senior ethicist for the National Catholic Bioethics Center. Again, his website, fathertad.com. It's a Tuesday. We're going to take a quick break, wrap up, and let you know what's coming up on a Wednesday.
This is Father Ken Briganti. Catholic Radio reaches a vast audience of people. It's an excellent tool of evangelization in the 21st century. So radio is the best way for us to get to know the Lord, and then we can love Him and serve Him and prepare ourselves in this life to be with Him for all eternity.
The world needs EWTN Catholic Radio, now more than ever.
The Encounter Conference, June 26th through the 28th at the New Glass City Center in Toledo, Ohio. 15 powerful speakers.
It is the encounter with the Holy Spirit that makes Jesus come alive and gives us the courage and the wisdom to go forth and to even risk our own lives.
Everyone pretty much says the miracles that Jesus did are real. The miracles that the early church did are real.
As often as the popes are talking about the new evangelization, they're also saying we need to pray for a new Pentecost. We need to return to the upper room. Encounter represents the church returning to the upper room. As we're coming boldly before God and asking Him to renew that Pentecostal fire for the strength, the gifts, and the wisdom to be able to preach Jesus to a lost and broken world so that we can become fully alive in Him so that the world may come to believe that Jesus is the one whom God sent.
Register today at EncounterConference.org. That's EncounterConference.org.
People ask how they can care for older family members who can't fully care for themselves. One answer is Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care. Visiting Angels assists adults nationwide with 600 locations to continue living at home and not have to move into a nursing home. Their caregivers provide assistance in hygiene, meals, and light housework. Services are provided up to 24 hours per day, and you can select your caregiver before service begins. More information, including franchise opportunities, is on the web at visitingangels.com.
Appreciate your listenership, EWTN, of course, Global Catholic Radio, EWTN.com. Coming up tomorrow, of course, it's a Wednesday, so you know what that means if you're a regular listener to this program. We have Joan Lewis from Joan's Rome, and also, of course, Jim and Joy Pinto at Home with Jim and Joy. We're also going to be taking a look at a beautiful new book from our friends at EWTM Publishing, all about new scientific evidence for the existence of God. Fascinating. Talk to you tomorrow, God willing. A domani. Ciao, ciao. See ya.
You've been listening to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo. Catholic Connection is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Our producer is Andrew Kruchek. For copies of this program or for more information, visit AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMariaRadio.net. Thanks for listening and join us next time for another edition of Catholic Connection.